She'd fuck you, too.
I flinched, but my reaction was nothing compared to Valaine's. I was frozen for a moment, stiffer than the Tin Man without oil. I gave a full-body shudder, and ice tinkled to the floor. I stepped forward, leaving my frosty casing behind. The entire library, furniture, books, floor, lamps, walls, glistened with a thin sheet of ice. The bulbs popped one after the next. "Stop it!" I snapped, breath frosting the air. "Both of you! You're tough guys, I get it, but I'm tired and fed up. So say whatever you came here to say without all the posturing, then get the hell out!" Barons laughed.
"Good for you, Miss Lane."
"Bottom line it, Barons. Now!"
"Get your things. We're going back to Dublin. We have work to do. The She-Seers didn't save you. I did."
"It was Danny who rescued me."
"You would have died here if not for me." "I would have saved her,"
said Valaine. "Bottom line it, Valaine, and mop up your mess." The ice was melting. "I'm not cleaning up after either of you. And fix the lamps. I need light." The lamps glowed again. The library was dry.
"The book was spotted recently. I know where and can sift you about, hunting it. You can track it much more quickly with me than with him."
"And you'll report to the Grand Mistress on our progress?" I said dryly.
"I aided Rowena only to pave the way for us to continue the moment you were able. I answer to you, as always, Michaela, not her."
"After your queen," I said bitterly. "The one you chose to stay with instead of rescuing me."
"You were first to me,"
Baron said.
"There was no queen in front of you with me."
"Right. No queen. Just 4 days," I reminded. "I don't believe it took you that long to find me. Care to tell me where you were the whole time? What did come before me?" He said nothing. I didn't think so. I crossed the room and moved to stand by the fireplace. It was the old-fashioned kind made for logs with no gas hookup. Valaine's temper tantrum had left me chilly. It had been a cold night in Dublin, and this unused wing was minimally heated. I missed my bookstore fires. I wanted comfort. "Make me a fire, Valaine!" Flames crackled and popped from white-barked, fragrant-smelling logs before I'd even finished speaking.
"I will provide for all your needs, Michaela. You have but to ask. Your parents are well. I have seen to it. Barons cannot give you what I can."
I rubbed my hands together, warming them. "Thank you for checking. Please continue to do so." At some point, I wanted to see them, if only from a distance. Even if the cell towers had been up, I wasn't sure I could have spoken to them right now. I was no longer the daughter they'd known. But I was the daughter who loved them and would do everything in my power to protect them. Even if it meant staying away, so none of my enemies could follow me there. I turned around. Valaine was on my right, Barons at my left. I was amused to see that a sofa, 4 chairs, and 3 tables had appeared in the 25 feet between them. Valaine had rearranged furniture while my back was turned. As if a little furniture would stop Jericho Barons. He could move lightning fast, and there was no love lost between these two. For the umpteenth time, I wondered why. I knew neither of them would ever tell me. Still, there might be a way. In the meantime, while I stockpiled my flagging energy for the attempt, I said, "Bring me up to speed. What happened at the Keltars on Samhain?"
"The ritual to maintain the walls failed,"
said Barons. "Obviously. Details."
"We used dark magic. We tried everything. The Keltar come from a line of druids that have long been walking a fine line, especially Cian. Dagus and Drustan made the first attempt. When that failed, Christian and I took our turn."
"What exactly did your turn constitute?"
"Don't ask, Miss Lane. This time just leave it. It was the only thing we could have done that might have worked. It didn't. It is no longer relevant."
I dropped the subject. I'd get more detail from Christian than I'd ever get from Barons, and I planned to see him as soon as possible. He was an integral part of my plans for the future. As if he'd read my mind, Baron said,
Christian is gone.
I jerked. What do you mean, gone?
Missing. He disappeared when the Fey realm supplanted Banthracade. The white stones where the Keltar performed the ritual. He was in the circle when it happened.
Well, where did he go? I demanded, looking from Barons to Valain.
If we knew that, he wouldn't be missing,
Baron said dryly.
Impossible to say,
said Valain.
Although we have been searching. My queen is deeply distressed to have lost one of her Keltar druids at such a critical time. His uncles, too, seek him.
He's been missing for 2 months? I was horrified. Where was the young, sexy Scotsman? Don't let him be in Faerie, I thought. Being made Priya. He had just the kind of extraordinary good looks that appealed to the Fey. I hated asking the next question. Do we know if he's alive? Does either of you have some mystical way of determining that? They shook their heads. I sighed heavily and rubbed my eyes. Damn, Christian was the only man I'd met since arriving in Dublin that I'd actually trusted. Well, more than anyone else, at least. And now he was gone. I refused to believe he was dead. That would be giving up on him. I would never give up on any of my humans. Not only did I like him, I needed him. He was a walking lie detector. His ability to discern truth from fiction was a talent I'd been itching to put to use. And it was these two standing in this very room that I'd wanted to test it on. I narrowed my eyes. How very convenient for both of them that he'd disappeared when he had. I was worried for Christian. I was disappointed that I'd lost the opportunity to force some answers. But I hadn't lost all my opportunities.
Get your things,
Baron said.
Let's go, now. Michaela comes with me,
said Valain.
You cannot protect her parents. You cannot sift. She will not choose you.
There was enough testosterone in the room for an entire army of men, and I wasn't immune to it. Even without glamour, Valain was more seductive than any human male alive. And Baron's, well, the body remembered and reveled in every moment of it. The two of them turning it up at the same time made it a little hard to breathe. I looked from one to the other, considering my options. They watched in silence, waiting for me to make my choice. I stepped toward Baron's. His dark gaze glittered with triumph. I could feel the smugness rolling off him, nearly as strong as the sexual charge he was throwing my way.
Think hard and fast,
Valain hissed.
It would be unwise to alienate me, Michaela.
I was thinking hard and fast. I closed my hand around Baron's forearm. He could not have looked more pleased if I'd just gazed up at him with doe eyes and told him he was my world. I locked my hand down, dug my nails into his flesh, and held on. His eyes narrowed, then flared, and then I was no longer seeing him at all, because I'd pushed violently, stabbed myself brutally deep into his mind with the special she-seer talent that had fully wakened in his bed. I wanted answers. I wanted to know why there was so much animosity between these two. I wanted to know who to trust, who was not the better man, but at least the slightly less bad one. I pushed, seeking any breach I could exploit, and suddenly I was in Faerie. It had to be. The scenery was impossibly lush, the colors too rich, vivid, so full of tone they had texture, like that first beach Valain had taken me to months ago, where I'd played volleyball with Alina, when he'd given me the gift of seeing her again, if only in an illusion. But this was no beach. This was the Fey Court. Brilliantly colored silk chaises were scattered around a dais. Trees sprouted leaves and flowers of incomprehensible color and dimension. The breeze smelled of jasmine and sandalwood and some other scent that I imagined heaven, if such a place existed, would smell like. I wanted to look around. I wanted to see the queen on her dais, but I couldn't turn our gaze toward it because I was a passenger in his head, and I was inside Baron's body. I was strong. I was cold. I was mighty, and they didn't even know just how mighty I was. They didn't recognize me, the fools. I was danger. I was everything they should fear, but they'd lived so long that they'd forgotten fear. I would teach them. I would remind them. I was with a fey princess, buried deep inside her. She throbbed around me. She was energy. She was empty. She was sex that devoured. Her nails were on my shoulders, clawing. I was more pleasure than any of her princes could ever be. I was full. I was inexhaustible. It was why she'd sought me. Word had spread as I'd meant it to, and bored, jaded, she'd come for me, as I'd known she would. I'd spent months at court, in her bed, watching, learning, studying the Seelie court, seeking answers, hunting the bloody damned book. But now I was bored, and I'd learned all there was to know from them, because they were fools who drank again and again from a mystical cauldron to make themselves forget. As if forgetting eradicated the sin. I needed them to remember. They couldn't, but I could make them remember fear. Valaine was watching me, as he'd been watching me from the moment I'd taken his princess, waiting for her to be his again, certain she would. After all, they were immortal. They were gods. They were invincible, waiting for that moment when I was no longer her protected plaything so he could destroy me.
Get out of my head!
I dug my nails into Baron's arm and cried out. He was fighting me, resisting. He'd shoved me out of the princess's body, sent me tumbling end over end from his memory at the Fey Court. I was on the fringes of his mind, reeling from the unexpected ejection. I gathered myself, forged myself into a missile of sheer will, and fired back at the blockade he'd erected.
I'm not done yet!
I ricocheted off a smooth black wall, and knew instantly it was impenetrable. He was stronger than me. I couldn't get through it. I would end up ramming myself to death on it if I tried. But I wasn't about to admit defeat. I harnessed the velocity of that ricochet like a boomerang, made a last-minute course adjustment, and veered sideways. Whatever was behind that wall would remain concealed. But I could get something else. I knew I could. And suddenly there I was again, standing at Fey Court, looking down at the princess. Baron slammed a wall up in front of me, but not fast enough. I blasted through it. I was Baron's, and she was on the ground, and I was laughing. He slammed up another wall, but didn't get it reinforced fast enough. I toppled it. The bitch was dead. He slammed one more wall up. Too little, too late. I shattered it right out of existence. Every fey in the Queen's Court was screaming, fleeing for their lives because the unthinkable had happened. One of their own had ceased to exist. One of their own had been killed. By me. Barons. Us. I was choking, sputtering, trying desperately to breathe, and I realized with horror that it wasn't the Baron's Mac persona that was choking. It was my body. I pulled back, yanked back, stumbled back, ripped myself from Baron's mind. It wasn't easy to untangle us. His hand was on my throat. Mine was on his.
What the fuck?
Valaine exploded. It was the most human sentence I'd ever heard him utter. He'd been watching us, but had no idea what had happened. Our battle had been a private one. Barons and I stared at each other. We released each other's throats at the same moment. I backed up a step. He didn't, but then I hadn't expected him to. You really can kill Valaine, I exclaimed. That's why he won't let you near him. You can kill him. How? Baron said nothing. I'd never seen him so still, so silent. I whirled on Valaine. How? I demanded. I was shaking. Barons could kill Fay. It was no wonder the shades left him alone. Did he have the spear or the sword? But I knew in my bones that it had been neither of those weapons. The wall he'd thrown up had shielded the answer. Whatever weapon he'd used, it was not one I knew. Valaine said nothing. What does he have on you? I cried, exasperated.
Decide, Miss Lane,
Baron said behind me.
Choose.
Valaine agreed. Go to hell, both of you. New world. New rules. New me. Don't call me. I'll call you.
To call me, you will require my name back,
Valaine said. So it can fail me again when I need it?
It failed only during that brief time when all magic was down. Such a moment is impossible to sustain. Darok will not attempt it again. He does not need to. He achieved his end.
I'll think about it, I said. And I would. All weapons. Good. Something clattered to the floor at my feet. It was a cell phone. I didn't turn. What's that for? Duh, no towers, remember? I mocked.
It works,
said Barons. He paused heavily, the better to emphasize his coup de grace.
It always did.
My breathing stopped. What he was saying was not possible. I spun, searched his eyes. The power was down. My call to Danny was disconnected. I never got service back. I knew. I'd kept checking all night. He moved toward me so quickly I didn't see him coming and had no chance to react. His body was pressed to mine. His lips were against my ear. I leaned into him and inhaled. I couldn't help myself. He whispered,
O ye of little faith, not for IYD.
It was the number he'd programmed into my cell, which stood for, If You're Dying.
But you didn't even try.
His tongue touched my ear. Then he was gone. Chapter 13. I sat on the edge of the sofa, rubbing my eyes. I needed sleep in the worst way, but I suffered few illusions that I was going to get any. My encounter with Valaine and Barons had left me too wired for words, and soon the Abbey would be waking up, and I'd have a whole new set of challenges to face. I stroked the glittering beauty of my spear. True to form, Valaine had returned it when I'd demanded he leave. After reassuring myself with its comforting weight, I tucked it back into my shoulder holster. I towed my old backpack over by the strap and dug around in it for my journal. I was surprised to find it. I thought someone would have confiscated it. I figured it was a pretty safe assumption that both Rowena and Barons had read it. I rubbed the embossed leather cover, grateful to see it again, as if it were an old friend. Since Alina had been killed, I'd filled 3 notebooks with feelings, speculations, and plans. At first, I'd begun keeping a journal as a sort of tribute to her, a way to somehow connect to her memory. Then I'd learned I could pour my grief into its pages instead of hurting my parents with it. Finally, I'd discovered what my older sister had known all along, that it was an invaluable tool for sorting thoughts, clarifying and refining them, and planning future action. God, I missed her. What I would give to sit and talk with her again. To hug her and tell her that I loved her. Since her death, I'd realized how few times I'd told her what she meant to me. I'd always assumed she knew that we'd had decades together, planning each other's weddings, having baby showers, sending our children off to school together, taking pictures at their proms. A lifetime of sisterhood. I steeled myself. No time for emotion. When this was all over, I would wallow in grief. I would make Valaine give her back to me again, in Faerie. I would grant myself the balm of illusion. When all this was over, I would deserve it. I flipped to a fresh page and began making notes of everything I'd learned recently. If something happened to me, I wanted to leave as detailed a record behind as possible for the next idiot who tried to do something about the mess we were all in. I can walk through wards, all of them, or just certain ones. I'm immune to Fey glamour. Must test this on a Fey besides Valaine. Barons can kill Fey. How? Valaine won't tell me. Why? Christian is missing. Is he alive? The Keltar ritual failed. What did they try and what went wrong? Must learn more about druid magic. Is it possible I can do druid magic too? Belaine said once that I had only begun to discover what I was. Like Danny, I need to test my limits. Jane is leading a civilian army that he's trained to eat on Seelie, protecting Dublin. There are still people in the city. Where? Should we try to move them out, to a safer place? Iron has some kind of effect on the Fae. What does it do, and does it work the same on every cast? How effective a weapon? I made a second column on the page, a to-do list. Form troop to investigate IFPs. Form troop to collect iron to make weapons and bullets. Form troop to figure out how to make weapons and bullets. Get into the forbidden libraries. Find out what is the Haven's prophecy and who are the current members. What are the Five? Someone had been sending me pages of Alina's journal. From her notes, I'd learned that in order to do whatever it was my sister had been trying to do, I assumed stop the book and drive the Fae from our world, she'd learned there was a prophecy known to the Haven, which was the She-Seer's High Council, that said we needed three things: the stones, the book, and the Five. I knew what the stones were, four bluish-black rune-covered rocks that, according to Barons, could either translate parts of the Dark Book or reveal its true nature. Barons had two of them in his possession. Belaine had the third, or knew where it was. I had no idea where to find the fourth. I knew what the book was, too. That was easy. Unfortunately, I had no idea what the Five were. I hoped the prophecy might clear things up, and I figured the best place to look for any prophecy about She-Seer matters was in Rowena's forbidden libraries, which was why I was so determined to secure a foothold at the Abbey. I didn't care how much I pissed off Rowena. It was the support of the She-Seers I wanted. I added a more immediate, personal goal to my to-do list. Take Danny into Dublin tonight and try to track down Chester's and Riordan. IYCGM was "If You Can't Get Me" on the cell phone Barons had given me. I'd called it once. It was answered by a man named Riordan, and we'd had a very cryptic, Barons-like conversation. I was willing to bet my last pair of clean panties, and I was dangerously low on them, that Riordan was one of Barons 8. Both Barons and Inspector O'Duffy had mentioned talking with the mysterious Riordan at a place called Chester's. I'd been meaning to track him down for months, but I'd been distracted by one crisis after another. I had no idea what or where Chester's was, or if it even still existed in the rubble that was Dublin. But if there was an opportunity to find one of the 8 men who'd stormed the Abbey with Barons to free me, I wasn't about to pass it up. Any man who knew Barons, any man Barons trusted to cover his back, was someone I wanted to have a nice, long, face-to-face talk with. On the panty note, loot store tonight for new underwear. A lot. Doing laundry wasn't something I saw myself having time for in the near future. I raked a hand through my hair. My nails were long against my scalp. They weren't all that had grown. I'd seen the reflection of my hairdo in a window last night. The cut was still good, but I had an inch of blonde roots that made me look like a skunk. Loot store for hair dye and manicure kit. I planned to grab more clothes while I was at it. Whether it should matter or not, people responded to outer appearances and were motivated to certain behaviors by them. A well-groomed, attractive leader was much more influential than an unkempt one. I made a third column, long-term major goals that would hopefully be accomplished short-term, because our world was changing drastically, much too fast. These were the critical ones. They had to happen. Figure out how to contain the She-Seedu. I nibbled the tip of my pen. Then what? During my first encounter with Belaine, he'd made it clear he felt there was only one option, that there was no one else who could be trusted with it. Take the She-Seedu to the Seelie Queen so she can recreate the Song of Making to rebuild the walls and re-imprison the Unseelie? I worried about that one. It wasn't in my blood to trust anything Fae, but I wasn't exactly flush with alternatives. I could drive myself crazy wondering what to do with the She-Seedu once I'd gotten it. I decided to focus on one impossibility at a time. get the book, then figure out the next step. I crossed out the last bullet and wrote another one. Kick their feckin' fey asses off our world. I liked that one. I underlined it 3 times. Oh, ye of little faith, you didn't even try. I winced, closed my journal and my eyes. Since Barron's had left, I'd been trying not to brood over his parting comment. For the past 24 hours, while I'd been running around half of Ireland, I'd been replaying the events of Halloween in the back of my mind, indulging myself in an exercise in futility, torturing myself with all the choices I might have made that night that could have yielded a different outcome. Then Barron's had gone and fired the real killer at me. I'd had a way to reach him the whole time, right there in my backpack. I opened my eyes, pulled out my cell, and thumbed through the 3 numbers that had been pre-programmed into the phone when he'd given it to me. I pressed the first one, Barron's cell number. I knew it wouldn't ring. It rang, startling me. I disconnected quickly. Mine rang. I flipped it open, snarled at Barron's. Just testing, and immediately disconnected. How in the world were these cell phones working? Was service back up in certain areas? I changed my settings to private and dialed my parents' number so they wouldn't know it was me, reserving the right to hang up if they answered, and I couldn't bring myself to speak. It didn't go through. I tried the brickyard, where I'd bartended back home. No connection. I tried 12 other numbers with no success. Apparently Barron's had some kind of special service. I thumbed up IYCGM and pressed it.
Mac,
a male voice growled. Just testing, I said, and hung up. I scrolled to IYD. My phone rang. It was IYCGM. I answered it.
I wouldn't, if I were you,
Riordan said. Wouldn't what?
Test the 3rd one.
I didn't bother asking how he knew. Like Barron's, he was on top of my every thought. Why not?
There's a reason it's called If You're Dying.
What's that?
So you use it only if you're dying,
he said dryly. Also, like Barron's, I could go around in circles with him forever. I'm going to call it, Riordan.
You're better than that, Mac.
Better than what? I said coolly.
Lashing out because you're hurt. He's not the one who hurt you. He's the one who brought you back.
Do you know what his idea of bringing me back was? I snapped. There was a smile in Riordan's voice.
I volunteered for the job. He didn't seem at all touched by my offer.
The smile faded.
Don't lose yourself in anger, Mac. It's gasoline. You can burn it as fuel, or you can use it to torch everything you care about and end up standing on a scorched battlefield with everybody dead, even you. Only your body doesn't have the good grace to quit breathing.
Deep inside, his words resonated. I was straddling a fine line, and I knew it. But there was a part of me that wanted to go over the edge, wanted to scorch the battlefield, just to watch the damned thing burn.
Stay focused, Mac. Keep your eyes on the prize.
What the bloody hell is the prize?
We work together. Take back our world. We all win.
What are you, Riordan? He laughed. What are the 9 of you? I pressed. He said nothing. I'm going to call it, I threatened. Bye now. I didn't hang up. He stopped laughing.
I'll kill you myself, Mac.
No, you won't.
Woman,
he said, and his voice was suddenly so hard and cold and ancient-sounding that the fine hair at the nape of my neck lifted and prickled all the way down my spine.
You don't know the 1st thing about me. The Mac that would call IYD when she's not dying isn't the Mac I'll protect. Choose carefully. Choose wrong, and it will be the last choice you ever make.
Don't you threaten! I held the phone away from my ear and stared at it disbelievingly. He'd hung up. On me! the only one who could track the book. This season's MVP. And I hadn't even gotten around to asking him what Chester's was and where to find it. My hair gusted, raised straight up in the air around my face in a tangle. Sheets flapped on the furniture. The flames of the fire flared, crackled, then nearly went out. Danny stood in front of me, guzzling orange juice and cramming her mouth with what looked like Little Debbie cakes. "We got trouble, Smack. Rose at the bus, and so's half the abbey. Shit's hitting the fan big time. It's time to go," she mumbled around a mouthful. She sniffed the air and looked crestfallen.
"Dude, they were both here. Why didn't you call me?"
If Roe and half the Abbey were at the bus, Trubs were Troubles. I was exhausted. I was wired. I was as ready as I was going to be. I stood and shoved my cell phone into my pocket.
"You have super hearing. Why didn't you hear them?"
"It's not that good."
My eyes narrowed. "You really can smell that they were here?" What I'd give for her super senses. She nodded.
"I'm gonna give one of 'em my virginity one day," she preened.
I was momentarily dumbstruck. I couldn't begin to enumerate all the things that were appalling about that possibility.
"We so have to talk," I finally managed. I added pointedly,
"Danielle." Her gamine grin faded, and I hated to see it go, so I added, "I don't know why you don't like it. It's such a pretty name." I knew why. Her toughness was all she had.
"Oh, sorry I dooted you, man."
She held out her hand.
"No thanks, I'm walking."
She snickered, grabbed my arm anyway, and we were gone. Chapter 14. It was complete chaos, and Rowena wasn't having an ounce of success taking control of the situation. When Danny stopped, I headed straight for the front of the bus. Fighting back the urge to puke, I climbed up on the bumper and hauled myself onto the hood, where I stood, looking down. Hundreds of she-seers stared back at me, with expressions ranging from disbelief that we'd dared return, to curiosity and excitement, to fear and blatant distrust. If I'd been an attorney like my daddy, the bus would have been my opening argument, and filled to overflowing as it was with dead unseelie and automatic weapons, it would certainly be swaying the jury. The she-seers had opened the doors and begun unloading it. Guns were piled on the lawn, between dead fae. I doubted they'd ever seen so many of our enemy up close and personal, sequestered as Rowena kept them. They couldn't seem to take their eyes off them, poking at them with their toes, turning them this way and that, examining them. Initially, I'd planned to fill the back of the Range Rover with dead unseelie heads, to show the she-seers what effect a mere two of us could have in a single night out on the town. But then we'd learned about iron, and raided Baron's stash of guns, and we'd had to swap rides. Danny blew the bus horn to silence the crowd. When a few short bursts did nothing, she laid on it, making it impossible to hear. Finally, there was silence. Rowena pushed from a small cluster of she-seers, moved to the front of the bus, and glared up at me.
"Get down from there this instant," she demanded.
"Not until I've had my say."
"You have no right to a say. You stole the spear and sword and left this entire abbey unprotected last night."
"Oh, please," I said dryly.
"Like it's being protected with you keeping the hallows to yourself, doling them out on rare occasions. What could you do if the Fae came for them? And we didn't steal them. I took back what was mine to begin with and gave Danny what should have been hers all along. Then we put them to the use they were meant for, killing Fae." I gestured behind me. "In case you didn't notice, a lot of Fae." "Return them to me now," Rowena demanded.
I shook my head.
"Not a chance. Danny and I did more last night to strike at our enemy than you've ever let these women do. And not because they can't, but because you won't permit it. We're supposed to see, serve, and protect. You told me we were born for it. That in the old days, when we arrived at a village, They feasted and offered us the finest of all they had, because we were their honored, revered guardians. We protected them. We lived and died for them. You don't let these women be guardians. You've made them afraid of their own shadows. I obviously have a higher opinion of them than you do. You will get down from there this very instant. You do not lead these women. You never will. I'm not trying to lead them. I'm showing them their options. It was a lie, but a white one, and my heart was in the right place. I would lead them, one way or another. I raised my eyes from Rowena and addressed the crowd. Does your grand mistress encourage you to explore your heritage? Does she help you hone your skills? Does she tell you anything about what's going on? Or does she keep things all hush-hush with her secret council? I paused heavily to emphasize what I was about to say next. Do you know that iron hurts the Fae? That there are civilian troops, your average everyday humans in Dublin, who are actively hunting the Unseelie? Doing our job, protecting the people who are still alive, shooting them with bullets of iron. Danny and I ran into a battalion of 50 last night. They were firing at hunters, driving them out of our city, while you slept behind the walls of this abbey, while you hid in safety, abandoning them to their fate. Is that who you are? Is that who you want to be? There was a moment of stunned silence, then a deafening cacophony of voices. Danny laid on the horn again. It took a full minute to silence them this time. Cat stepped forward. How are humans hunting them? They can't see them. Most of the Fae no longer hide behind Glamour Cat. You'd know that if she ever let you leave. They feel invincible, and why wouldn't they? There are no She-Seers getting in their way, stopping them. But we can change that. If we start hunting them, won't the Fae just start concealing themselves with glamour again? I nodded. Sure, it'll get more dangerous, and we'll need every special She-Seer talent we've got. Then the humans will no longer be able to fight them, she worried. They won't be able to reinforce us. Fear underscored her words, and I understood it. How could a mere few hundred She-Seers with only two weapons hope to defeat an army of Unseelie? I wanted to know what Rowena knew, so I watched her carefully when I told Cat. Humans have found a way to open their eyes and see the Fae as we do. The crowd gasped. When Rowena's expression didn't change at all, I knew it was just one more weapon, like the sword and the spear that she'd withheld from the women. You knew! I exploded. You knew all along, and in the past 2 months, you never once considered using it to help defend our planet. 'Tis old law and forbidden, Rowena hissed. You've no idea of the consequences. I know what the consequences are if we don't do it. We'll lose our planet piece by piece. 2 billion are already gone, Rowena. How many more will you let die? How many lives do you consider expendable? It was our duty to protect the Shisadu. We didn't. Now it's our duty to fix this mess. You knew there was a way to make the average human safer, and you didn't tell us? Cat stared at Rowena. All those families around the countryside that we've promised to protect and have lost, we could have taught to protect themselves? Her eyes filled with tears. For the love of Mary, Rowena, I lost my Sean and Jamie. I could have made them able to see the Unseelie. They could have defended themselves. What she's not telling you, Rowena spat, is that in order to see them, they must eat the living, immortal flesh of the Dark Fae. She-Seers gasped. Some made choking noises. I understood that perfectly. Even when I'd been battling a growing addiction to it, it had still been revolting. What she's not telling you, Rowena continued, is that eating it has unspeakable consequences. It's addictive, and once a human begins, they can't stop. It changes the person. What would you expect cannibalizing the flesh of our dark enemy to do? It corrupts the very soul. Ugh, is that the sentence you would have inflicted upon your innocent brothers, Katrina? Would you have seen them damned rather than dead? Her voice rose, strong with fury. What she's not telling you, and should be if we're discussing dark secrets being withheld, is that it was she who taught these humans to eat it, and she who has eaten it herself, I announced before she could. And you can kick the addiction. I did. Score one for Rowena. As I suspected, she'd read my journal. I tried to rapidly, mentally review it, to anticipate where else she might try to pull the rug out from under me. I'd poured my heart and soul into those pages. Rowena says it changes you. I'm not so sure about that. Judge for yourself whether I'm damned, I told them. Judge for yourself whether the humans in Dublin who are fighting our war for us are truly any different for having done what was necessary to survive. Or continue blindly taking Rowena's word for things. If I'm so damned, why am I the only she-seer out there on the front lines doing something? Hey! Danny was suddenly on the hood of the bus beside me. What am I, chuck liver? Surf and turf, I assured her. Top shelf whiskey. She grinned. Because she walks the book herself, Rowena accused. That's why she's out there, so she can take power for herself. Oh, balls, I scoffed. If that were true, I would have allied myself with the Unseelie long ago. The LM would never have had to turn me pariah. How do we know you're not still? Rowena demanded. I can walk, I said dryly. Pariah, I told the women, is a terrible thing to be. But not only did I recover from it, I've acquired some kind of immunity to sexual glamour. Valaine no longer has any death by sex fae impact on me now. That got their attention. Look, you can face what's out there and get stronger for it, or you can stay behind these walls and take orders until our planet is beyond saving. You want to talk about damned? Our entire race is if we don't do something about it. The women exploded again and turned to one another, talking frantically. I'd definitely stirred them up. I'd given them more information in a few short minutes than their grand mistress had in years. I'd made them feel more empowered than she'd ever let them feel. Rowena gave me an icy look and turned to study her protégés. She made no move to silence them, nor did I. I preferred they work themselves up even more. Then I would cut in and tell them my plans, form troops and assign tasks. Rowena was looking at me again. I suspected she wanted to address the crowd, but I wasn't about to help her silence them. I would blow the horn in a few minutes and give my closing, rousing mutiny speech. What happened next happened so quickly that I couldn't stop it. Rowena slipped a whistle from the pocket of her robes and blew on it sharply, three shrill bursts. The crowd instantly fell silent, obviously trained to the sound. Then she was speaking, and it was too late for me to stop her without seeming argumentative and petty. I would have to let her have her say, then turn it against her when she was done.
I've known most of you since birth, she said. I've visited your homes, watched you grow, and brought you here when it was time. I know your families. I have been a part of your everyday struggles and triumphs. Each of you is as my own child.
She favored them with a gentle smile, the very portrait of a loving parent. I didn't trust it one bit. I wondered if I was the only one who saw the disturbing image of a cobra smiling with human teeth.
If I have erred, It is not that I have not loved you enough, but that I have loved you too much. I have wanted, as any mother would, to keep her children safe. But my love has prevented my daughters from becoming the women they could and should be. It has prevented me from leading you as I must. I have erred, but will no longer. We are Shitseers. We are humanity's defenders. We were born and bred to battle the Fae, and from this day forward, that is what we will do.
All softness in her demeanor abruptly melted away. She snapped straight, suddenly seemed a foot taller, and began firing orders.
Cat! She barked. I want you to handpick a group and put them to work determining how we can use iron as a weapon. Catch a few on Sealy. Test it on them. Devote a second group to locating the most common sources of it, and collect it with all haste.
She waved a hand at the bus behind her.
We have guns enough for all of us,
she shouted triumphantly, making it sound as if the triumph were hers.
I want iron bullets to go around.
I gritted my teeth.
Learn how to make them, she ordered. Set up a smithy in the old ways if we must. Select a third group to scout Dublin. And Katrina, you have proved yourself again and again a worthy and valuable leader. I want you in charge of this group yourself.
Cat glowed. I seethed. At this point, I knew the wisest thing for me to do was stay silent. But it wasn't easy. There were a dozen biting comments I wanted to make. Reminders that I'd brought the guns. I'd found out about iron. I'd been the one advocating battle when their precious GM had been blindly and insistently against it. But I could read the mood of this crowd, and at the very root of it was an adage as old as time. Better the devil you know than the one you don't know. Especially if the devil you do know is about to give you what you wanted anyway. I couldn't compete with that. I was the devil they'd known for only a few short months. And my press hadn't exactly been good. Not with Rowena in charge of the media. The Grand Mistress's voice soared in volume.
I want to know the numbers of Fae in the city so we can begin planning how and when to attack.
She raised her small hand into the air and made a fist.
Today is the dawn of a new order. No longer will I allow my love for you to blind me as it has in the past. I will lead my daughters proudly into battle, and we will do what we were born to do. We will remind the Fae that we drove them from our world and forced them to hide for 6,000 years. We will remind them why they feared us, and we will drive them from it again. She fears to war!
The crowd exploded into cheers. Beside me, Danny said,
What the fuck? How'd she do that, Mac?
I looked at Rowena, and she looked at me, and we had an entire conversation in a glance.
Child, did you really believe you could take them from me?
Her fierce blue glare mocked.
Touché, watch your back, old woman.
She'd won, for now. But it wasn't a complete loss. Although Rowena was taking the credit for it, at least the She-Seers were getting to do everything I'd wanted them to do, short of exploring IFPs, and that could wait. I might have lost the war, but I'd won a few of the battles. My first attempted coup had failed. My next one wouldn't.
Politics, Danny, I muttered. We've got a lot to learn.
Nothing had been easy for me in Dublin. I no longer expected it to be, nor would I waste time complaining when it could be put to better use moving forward.
Uh-huh, she agreed glumly. But I still ain't giving her back my sword.
Rowena turned her cobra smile our way.
Cut! It's long past time I bestowed this honor upon you, she said. You will lead us to victory, carrying the Sword of Light. Danny, give it to Katrina. The sword is now hers.
5 seconds later, I was on my hands and knees in the middle of a rocky field, vomiting the remains of the protein bar I'd eaten an hour ago. I'd never been on such a bumpy, horrible ride in my life.
What was that?
I groaned, wiping my mouth with the back of my hand.
Hyperspeed?
I said, Danny snapped, I ain't giving her back me sword.
I looked up at her standing over me, skinny elbows poking out, fists at her waist, fiery red hair flaming in the sunlight, and nearly laughed. The kid was a total wild card. But our disappearing act was going to have consequences. Left to my own devices, I would have stood my ground longer. I would have offered cooperation, protection, and tried to sell them on it, same way I'd tried with Jane. If that had failed, I'd have had Danny whiz us out of there. But I would have tried first, and the trying would have spoken volumes to some of the girls. It was too late now. I had no doubt Rowena was exploiting the situation for all it was worth, making us out to be complete traitors, turning our backs on the entire order. I rubbed my eyes. I was too tired to think. I needed rest. Then I would figure out how to salvage the things I needed salvaged. It wasn't that I minded being an outcast. I'd been feeling that way ever since I'd arrived in Dublin and had gotten downright comfortable with it. Alone, I had a lot less to worry about. But to accomplish my goals, I needed at least some of the she-seers on my side.
Did you see her face?
How could I? All I saw was a big blue blur of bus as we whizzed past it. Then nothing.
Was she ever wicked pissed? She really didn't think I'd do it,
Danny said wonderingly. And I could tell she herself hadn't been entirely sure she'd do it. Until she did, there was a chance Rowena might forgive her, blame it all on me and take her back into the fold. There wasn't any more. Danny was persona non grata. There was no going back from this one.
It was going good, wasn't it, Mac? I mean, I wasn't just imagining it. The girls were listening to us and liking us.
I nodded.
Man, it went bad really fast.
I nodded again. We looked at each other for a long moment.
Dude, she said finally, I think we're outcasts.
Dude, I agreed with a sigh. Chapter 15. At 10:30 that night, I was back in Dublin and headed for 939 Revemoyle Street. I was pretty sure I'd found Chester's. There were three listings in the phone book under that name, a barbershop, a men's clothing store, and a nightclub. I'd opted for the nightclub because the advertisement had suited the voice of the man I'd spoken to on the phone. Upscale, classy, with a touch of the risque, as if anything one might want was available for purchase there, if one had the right currency, walk the walk and talk the talk. I caught a glimpse of my reflection in a passing window and smiled. I was walking the walk. My hair was jet and a little wild. I'd moosed it and let it do what it wanted. My lipstick was red and glossy and matched my nails. I was wearing black leather from head to toe, not for the statement it made, but for the practicality of it. With the right kind of leather, you can sponge off just about anything. Fabric isn't blood repellent. There was energy in my step and fire in my eyes. I'd finally gotten some much-needed sleep. Danny and I had holed up in a deserted house on the outskirts of Dublin until late afternoon, then headed out for food and supplies. It had felt strangely intimate and uncomfortable occupying the residence of someone who'd either died in the riots on Halloween or fled Dublin. But we needed somewhere to stay, and it seemed pointless not to take advantage of one of the tens of thousands of unoccupied homes. Since both my McHalos were back at the Abbey, our first stop had been a sporting goods store, where we built two new ones and stuffed backpacks with flashlights and batteries. Although the shade seemed to have left Dublin, I wasn't taking any chances. Then we'd gone to the mall, where I dyed my hair in a public restroom, washed up and changed. Danny had headed off for an electronics store,
where I later found her sprawled in front of a computer, next to a small mountain of battery packs and a pile of DVDs. I towed a few of the DVDs out. My eyes widened. I glanced quickly at the computer screen. Fortunately for her, it wasn't one of them.
"Watch any of that porn," I growled, "and I'm going to kick your petunia."
She looked up.
"Wicked cool outfit, Mac."
Then she scowled.
"I hunt and kill things. What does it matter what I watch? These eyeballs seen it all, dude."
She somehow managed to swagger while cross-legged on the floor.
"I don't care how tough you think you are. You're 13, and there are limits. You're not watching this stuff. And if you are, you'd better hide it from me, because if I catch you, there's going to be hell to pay."
She shoved the computer from her lap and bounded to her feet.
"That's ridiculous,"
she spat, green eyes sparking.
"I watch things die every day, but I can't watch people feck. You're not the boss of me."
She grabbed her pack and began walking away. "Those aren't just people fecking, Danny. Those are hardcore."
"So?"
she sneered over her shoulder.
"What were you a few days ago?"
"It wasn't like that."
"So you're gonna tell me what it was like? Being pariah was all poetry and roses?"
There had been moments that had felt startlingly like that. Not with the Unseelie princes, but later with Barons. I crammed that thought into the padlocked box in my head where I keep all those things I can't deal with. Soon I was going to have to sink the thing in concrete to keep it shut.
"I'm not telling you not to watch people having sex, although I wish you'd wait a few years. I'm telling you to make better choices. Watch the softcore stuff, the ones that show sex as something good."
"Mac," she said flatly, "get a grip. The world sucks. Ain't no good left in it."
"There's good everywhere. You just have to look for it."
I nearly choked on my words. I sounded just like my daddy and was surprised I still believed what I'd said after all I'd been through. Looked like the rainbow wasn't entirely black.
She whirled on me, cheeks flushed, eyes furious. "Really? What? Name some of those good things for me, will you? Why don't you tell me about 'em? I got a great idea. Let's make a list. Let's write down all the wonderful things in the world. 'Cause I've been looking really hard lately, and I ain't been seeing a feckin' one."
Her hands were fisted, and she was shaking. It had taken me until I was 22 to be carved by tragedy. How old was Danny when its razor-sharp teeth drew first blood? She'd told me her mother was killed by the Fae 6 years ago, which would have made her 7 at the time. Had she watched it happen? Was that how long she'd been with Rowena? What had the ruthless old woman been doing to her all that time?
"What happened to you, Danny?" I said softly. "You think you have the right to just ask me that? Like I'm going to peel myself open and let you poke around inside me? Like you can pour me out like some little teapot because you're dangling me by my handle?"
"I'm not dangling you by any handle, Danny."
"You're trying to. Trying to force me to spill my secrets. Dump them all over the place so once you know them, you can throw me away like a piece of trash. Same as the Unseelie princes did to you. Like some stupid fecker that shouldn't have even been fecking born."
I was stunned by the intensity of her reaction, baffled by the direction our conversation had taken.
"I'm not trying to pry into you, and I would never throw you away. I care about you, you prickly little pain-in-the-butt porcupine, so buck up and deal with it. I worry about what you'll become, enough to fight with you about it. And I'm telling you, choose better movies, eat your vegetables, floss, and treat yourself with respect, because if you don't, nobody else will. I care."
"You wouldn't if you knew me."
"I do know you."
"Leave me alone."
"Can't," I said flatly. "You and me, we're like sisters. Now get a grip on the teen angst and let's get moving. I need you tonight, and we've got a lot to do."
It had always worked whenever Daddy did it to me, made me do something, to keep my mind off wallowing in whatever emotion I felt like I was going to die from at the moment. She stared at me, eyes narrowed, lips drawn in a snarl, and I got the impression she was on the verge of freeze-framing out. I wondered how my parents had survived me. I wondered what she was really so upset about. I wasn't stupid. There was subtext here. I just couldn't figure out what it was. I was about to begin tapping a foot when she finally turned around and began walking. I followed her in silence, giving her the chance to cool off. The fabric of her long black leather coat eventually relaxed and creased between her shoulder blades. She took a few deep breaths, then said,
"Sisters forgive each other a lot, don't they, Mac? I mean, more than most people."
I thought of Alina and how she'd fallen for the worst villain in this epic mess, even inadvertently helped him gain power, of how she'd waited until it was too late to call me. Recently, I'd begun to realize my sister had made some hedgy decisions, like not telling me what was going on as soon as she'd learned about it, and trying to handle it all herself, without asking for help. Strength wasn't about being able to do everything alone. Strength was knowing when to ask for help and not being too proud to do it. Alina hadn't called in all the reinforcements she could, and she should have. I wouldn't make the same mistake. Still, regardless of anything she'd done or failed to do, it didn't change how much I loved her, and it never would. Nothing could.
"Like fighting over what movies to watch,"
Danny clarified when I didn't answer immediately. I was about to reply when she muttered, "I thought you'd think I was cool for watching them." I rolled my eyes. "I already think you're cool. And honey, sisters forgive each other everything."
"Really? Truly everything?"
As we walked out of the electronics store, I caught a glimpse of her face in the mirror above the door. It was bleak. My Dublin no longer existed. Smashed, broken were the brilliant neon signs that had illuminated the buildings with a kaleidoscope of colors. Long gone were the colorful, diverse people that had filled the streets with boisterous camaraderie and endless craic. Wrecked were the facades of the hundreds of pubs of Temple Bar. The quaint street lamps were twisted pretzels of metal, and no music spilled from open windows or doors. It was silent. Too silent. All animal life was gone, down to the crickets in the soil. Not one motor hummed. There were no heat pumps kicking on and off. You don't realize how much white noise the world makes until it suddenly stops, making it sound like prehistoric times. This new Dublin was dark and creepy and still not dead. The once bustling Irish city was now undead. You could feel the life in her, lurking in the dark wreckage. But it was the kind of life you wanted to drive a stake through. Given the number of fae I could sense in the city, so many that it was impossible to separate them out until we were almost on top of them, we encountered surprisingly few unseelie on the streets. I wondered if they were holding the equivalent of a convention or political rally somewhere for the great L.M., freer and leader of the bastard half of the fae race. Nor did we see Jane, so I supposed he was off terrorizing hunters in another part of the city. Over the course of the 20 or so blocks that we walked, like a Joe, as Danny called it, because I wasn't about to come face to face with Riordan for the first time feeling like I wanted to puke on his shoes, we encountered 4 rhino boys. Why did they always travel in pairs? And an awful slithering thing that was nearly as fast as Danny. I took the RBs. She got the snake. We were at the cross streets of Revamel and Grandon when I saw her. If my senses hadn't been so fuzzed with unseelie static from too many on one channel, I might have picked up one of the sifting cast ahead and reacted better. At first, I couldn't believe my eyes. In my defense, from behind, I thought it was him. They looked so similar. But I knew it couldn't be, because Barons and I had killed him. Then I thought he must not have been a singularity. Some of the Unseelie castes have countless numbers, like the Rhino Boys, while others are the only of their kind given dark birth by the Unseelie King, perhaps because even he considered them abominations. I had a bad moment contemplating the horror of hundreds or even thousands of this type of Unseelie loose on the world, and in that moment I forfeited the element of surprise. I must have made some small sound, because she suddenly turned, 9 feet of leprous body, topped by a long, squished face that was all ravenous mouth. In a blink of an eye she assessed, and dismissed me. I was the wrong gender. Danny got kudos for trying. She freeze-framed, but I could have told her not to bother. This one sifted. I knew, because its male counterpart had once sifted down a street at me and, if not for Barons, would have killed me. The Unseelie vanished into thin air, leaving Danny standing a block down the street from me, sword drawn back, seething at having lost her kill.
"What the fuck was that, Mac?"
she said.
"I never seen one before. You?"
"Barons called it the Gray Man. We killed it. I thought it was one of a kind, but we just saw the Gray Woman."
"What's her specialty?"
Danny looked morbidly fascinated. I'd been that way once, obsessed with all the terrible ways I might die at an Unseelie's hands, or claws, or hundreds of sharp-toothed mouths like Alina. "They have a taste for human beauty. Baron says they destroy what they can never have, devour it like a delicacy. They cast a glamour of physical perfection and choose the most attractive humans to suit.